Trendstorm.
Welcome to Radio Sputnik and Trendstorm. My name is Andrew Kripko, and I'm going to give you a forward-focused analysis of things to come and the general trends behind them. Here's what we have for you today. Eastern Economic Forum, Russia's Asian Balancing Act. Next week's Eastern Economic Forum in Vladivostok will showcase Russia's Asian Balancing Act as Moscow courts investment from some of the largest and best-performing economies in the world. Chemnitz, migrant mayhem. The German city of Chemnitz has witnessed intense protests against Chancellor Merkel's open borders policy over the past week after two migrants were arrested for stabbing a local to death, which has in turn sparked enormous pro-migrant counter-demonstrations as well. And also, Donbas, from assassination to invasion? The East Ukrainian region of Donbas is on pins and needles following the assassination of Alexander Zakharchenko, with some fearing that the killing might encourage Kiev to once again invade the self-proclaimed republics. Opening up this edition of Trendstorm is Russia's upcoming Eastern Economic Forum. Next week's Eastern Economic Forum in Vladivostok will showcase Russia's Asian Balancing Act as Moscow courts investment from some of the largest and best-performing economies in the world. This yearly event first began in 2015 and has since served as proof of Russia's so-called pivot to Asia, given the prominence that it's achieved in the years since. The forum always sees the participation of high-profile guests from the Asia-Pacific region and serves as a platform for President Putin to hold bilateral talks with his counterparts. This year will be no different, as the presidents of China and Mongolia will be in attendance, as will the prime ministers of South Korea and Japan. These four countries, as well as Eurasian Economic Union partner Vietnam and Russia's decades-long partner India, both of whom are sending delegations to Vladivostok, have shown an increased interest in investing in Russia's resource-rich and geostrategic Far Eastern region, which has traditionally lagged behind all other parts of the country in terms of its development. That's actually one of the reasons why President Putin originally thought of creating the forum, in order to encourage these up-and-coming nations to establish a stake in the Far East's success and cordially compete with one another in order to rapidly integrated into the larger Asia-Pacific region. Whether it's through resource extraction deals, the establishment of connectivity corridors, municipal infrastructure investments, or the construction of factories, there are plenty of opportunities for other countries to profit from the Russian Far East, especially since Moscow recently implemented a relaxed visa regime for the region and is spearheading several special economic zones there. Earlier this year, Russian Deputy Prime Minister Yuri Trutnev noted that these preferences were largely responsible for foreign investors committing over $63 billion to the region so far, which, to put it in perspective, is roughly the same amount that China just said that it'll provide to Africa in grants, loans, and investments. Judging from the past 3 years, the upcoming Eastern Economic Forum is expected to build upon the success of its predecessors and continue laying the foundations for Russia's rise as an Asia-Pacific power. All right, folks, what's going to be happening next week is sure to be a very interesting time, and I'm very happy to announce that we have two guests from the region to discuss this further with us. The first one that we're going to speak to today is Mr. Ray Hosseini. Ray is half Japanese and half Iranian and currently resides in Tokyo.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Ray, Prime Minister Abe's visit to Vladivostok will include political discussions with President Putin on the state of the South Kurils, which Japan regards as the Northern Territories, per what it considers to be an unresolved post-World War II dispute with the USSR. So, Ray, what can we expect from these talks?
I don't know. I mean, there is a very clear disagreement between Russia and Japan over those islands, because both of them claim that the islands belong to them. Russia is saying that the islands became Russian territory legally as a result of World War II. And Japan, on the other hand, claims that the islands belong to Japan traditionally. So I don't really think that either of them are going to budge over this issue, especially since the Japanese parliament just voted in July this year to fix their statement from 1982 in order to pursue the return of the territories even more, which obviously was criticized harshly by the Russian side. So really, I don't think there will be an agreement over this issue anytime soon. What's obvious, though, is that both Russia and Japan are very eager to develop these islands and the wider region in general, and the economical benefits are too big to be ignored for both sides. So it's likely that the issue will be circumnavigated, as in they will leave the issue for now with some small agreements, perhaps, over the treatment of the Japanese residents who come from these islands, etc., etc., in order to concentrate more on the economy and development. I personally think that it's wiser for both sides to focus on economical cooperation and not let the territorial issues get in their way. And I think that's what's going to happen.
Okay, I see. Well, thank you very much for telling us about that then. Now, since we're speaking about economic issues, and it's, of course, the Eastern Economic Forum, I'd like to talk about how eager Russia has been to encourage more Japanese investment in the Far East Eastern region. So, Ray, bearing this in mind, what spheres are Japanese businessmen most attracted to in this region right across the from the Sea of Japan, and could the confluence of Japanese and Chinese economic interest here possibly contribute to better relations between those two Asian great powers?
Okay, I mean, there are opportunities for Japanese businesses and industries in many, many spheres in this region. Japan as a country is so much ahead of the world in many fields and can offer the know-how of top-class engineers, scientists, researchers in many things. City planning, medicine, environmental technologies, digital economy, and so on and so on. The list is endless. The Russian Far East offers especially good opportunities for small to medium-sized Japanese enterprises who hold many of the typically Japanese and unique trade and technological secrets. I believe many are already trying to explore the opportunities in this region, and Russia has recently made it easier for them to enter as well, which is also a sign to show that Russia is really happy to have them. JETRO, also known as Japan External Trade Organization, has already stated that Russia is the most important country for Japan to invest in, and that it's on its way to become one of Japan's biggest economical partners. As for the confluence of Japanese and Chinese interests, although the two superpowers can become big competitors in the region, there's certainly lots of room for cooperation and better relations. I believe the two can offer the region very different things and don't necessarily need to compete on the same fields. In fact, I believe that they can complement and benefit each other by offering things that the other doesn't have. So yes, I believe this can contribute to better relations between the two and three, really, including Russia.
Okay, yeah, I really like your vision about how Japan and China could engage in friendly competition in the Russian Far East, complementing one another's developmental policies in the region, and ultimately working out to everyone's win-win benefit. That's definitely a very progressive vision that I think we all hope we can see unfold in the coming years. Now, Ray, from the other side of the sea, of course, Russia also wants to increase its investments in Japan. So what industries, other than the obvious ones of oil and gas, might Russian businessmen be interested in? And could growing economic ties between Russia and Japan contribute to an improvement in Russian-American relations via Japan? What do you think?
I mean, this is the hardest question because I'm not really familiar with what Russians want in Japan. But personally, I think Russia has so much to offer to Japan. It's definitely not only heavy industries like oil and gas, definitely in aviation technologies and in military. I think these two could gain so much from each other in these fields. And I believe it's really time for Japan to reconsider many of its alliances, especially its one-sided ties to the U.S., which I believe gets in the way of many things. Perhaps this won't happen under Abe, though, as he's extremely pro-U.S. Also, culturally speaking, Russia has so much to offer Japan. The arts, such as ballet, for example, there could be so much that Japan could gain from Russia, or the film industry. And I think it's not only like businesses, I think in the arts, there's so much that they can cooperate. I believe the future is bright between the two. That is if the U.S. doesn't get in the way. As with the Russian-U.S. relations via Japan, I don't know. I think that depends a lot on the U.S.'s internal politics. Although, yes, if they can see through Japan that there are too many economical opportunities in the Russian Far East, it's possible. But then the U.S. has never been about cooperation. but always about bullying and subduing. So it really depends on the U.S. Perhaps as long as it remains a superpower and the dollar stays the biggest reserve currency.
Ray, thank you for enlightening us about the state of Russian-Japanese relations, especially in regards to how the Eastern Economic Forum could help them take ties to the next level with very positive regional ramifications. Now we're going to hear what Mr. Dong Eun Gwak has to say. Dong is a student from the Hankuk University of Foreign Studies Graduate School of International Area Studies, majoring in the study of Russia and the Commonwealth of Independent States.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Dong, how promising do you believe that President Moon's proposal last month for a seven-nation Northeast Asian railroad community between the two Koreas, China, Russia, Japan, Mongolia, and the U.S. is? And Dong, how could the successful implementation of this vision complement Moscow's plans for the Far East?
Well, many people are expecting it. As we know, Korea is still divided in two nations, you know, right? And there's no way to go to other nations by land, even though Korea is a peninsular country. But if President Moon's proposal is realized, it will be a kind of a revolution for Koreans. Some people are dreaming of travel by Trans-Siberian Railway, not by ship or airplane. And in the viewpoint of professionalists in the study of Russia and nations in CIS, it will be a good chance for logistics and trade industry. Not only just such kind of industries, but also others would be. Railway in Korea will be linked to not only railways in Russia, but also in China and Mongolia. Although there are various difficulties in realizing this proposal, such as relations between each country and building infrastructures, and especially unification of South and North Korea. But if all nations in, as you said, in seven nations try best to realize this plan, it will be very helpful to Asian Pacific nations, and relation between Korea and Russia, it will be very helpful.
Okay, I see. Well, everything you just explained is very fascinating in terms of how you laid out the regional economic paradigm. So, Dong, apart from rail connectivity then, what other investment opportunities in the Russian Far East could South Korea be prospecting, and how does Seoul's growing participation in various projects there work out to both it and Moscow's larger strategic interest?
In the period President Park's term of office, relations between South Korea and Russia became worse, or it can be said frozen. But a few months ago, President Moon and President Putin had an assembly in Moscow in the period of World Cup 2018. Professionalists in studies of Russia and CIS are prospecting that this would give a boost to improve relations between South Korea and Russia. And recently, there is an issue related to Russia and South Korea. It is polar route. Korean government recently is planning to develop this route and set up plan for it. Some Korean shipping companies and others try to use it as a model following government policy. Even though railway project is realized, there's a limitation in amount of logistic transportation. Developing and using commonly polar routes can be a chance for Korea. Of course, there are difficulties in using commonly polar route, but Korea should see in the long-term perspective, I think like that. And for realizing it, cooperation between Russia and South Korea needs to be stronger and more sustainable.
Right, I totally agree. And I think that's a very interesting proposal that you brought up. And a lot of our listeners might not have even been aware that South Korea's interest in the polar route. So thank you for bringing that to our attention. So Dong, to wrap everything up and to give us a forward-looking perspective on things, you know, Russia is very eager to expand its investments in Asian Pacific countries. So what South Korean industries, other than the oil and gas ones, might its businessmen be interested in?
Korea has focused on industries related to fossil fuel from Russia, such as petrol and gas. You already mentioned in the question, but many Koreans first remind such resources when thinking of Russia, but Russia has various kinds of invaluable resources as well as gas and petrol. Rare earth resources can be a representative example, and the future value is becoming higher. In the long-term perspective, Korea needs to develop the resources and increase investment for it. As a student who study and research Russian economic and industry, I think we shouldn't concentrate only just importing contingent goods and products from heavy industries such as car or steelmaking or other things, but need to research and analyze Russian economic policy and financial market deeply. I'm sure that the same must be proceeded for sustaining cooperation between two nations in economy. And also, it will be very helpful to policy, diplomatic, and etc.
Dong, I really enjoyed our conversation. I thought it was forward-looking and very inspiring. It also gave us a lot to hope for during next week's Eastern Economic Forum, particularly concerning the polar route and rare earth minerals.
Trendstorm.
So folks, if we think back on what both Ray and Dong shared with us today, we can agree that definitely the Eastern Economic Forum is continuing the success of its predecessors. There's a lot to be hopeful for, and Russia is indeed committing a very fine economic balancing act by bringing together a variety of regional partners to help invest and develop the Far Eastern region. So folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us.